opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new place. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Gold.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
I can't miss. Professor Griff. You're listening to Junior Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Welcome to another edition of the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton. We started off the program with Desiree, Gracious Mama Africa, and the lyrics pose and raise some interesting questions. I encourage you to go back and listen to it again and think about what she's asking and what she's saying in this particular song. You're logged on to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. We have an interesting guest today, Brother William Reed, who is the president and CEO of the Black Press International. He's a syndicated writer appearing in over 140 newspapers. He's a former executive director of the National Newspaper Publishers Association. His column is entitled The Business Exchange. He's a PR, communications, and media consultant, and very wise to the ways of Washington, D.C. And we'll speak with him following these messages, and after this message, we'll have a From the Ramparts commentary, and then the next voices you'll hear will be those of yours truly and William Reed, writer, thinker, communications expert, and the president and CEO of the Black Press International. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com. Or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated, and you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support. From the Rampart, dispatches from the front line, observations and commentary on the psychological warfare and the battle for our mind, body, and soul with Junius Ricardo Stanton. The global gangsters are waging this war. Quote, wars are a highly profitable racket, which gives an enormous incentive to keep them going. This is one of the reasons why the war in Afghanistan is now the longest war in U.S. history. This system has led to a perpetual state of war. Military spending, although widely reported as being around $680 billion per year, is more accurately totaling over $1 trillion per year. Of this staggering amount of annual spending, 25% of it goes unaccounted for, not counting the billions of our tax dollars lost to overcharging and all-out fraud, unquote. From Revolution or World War III by David DeGraw. Back in the 70s, Nikki Giovanni, one of the pioneers of the resurgent Black Power, Black Arts movement, and an outstanding poet in her own right, said in her piece entitled Great Pox Whitey, quote, they wage the wars in the name of peace,
Ain't they got no shame? The great emancipator was a bigot. Ain't they got no shame? And making the world safe for democracy with 20 million slaves. Ain't they got no shame? Nah, they ain't got no shame. Unquote. Well, it seems the more things change, the more they remain the same. In 2011, with his foray into yet another sovereign nation, Barack the Mad Bomber Obama is setting the stage for another protracted conflict, this time in Libya, to keep the cha-ching of U.S. imperialist thuggery going. Despite noble-sounding words such as a humanitarian mission to save the civilians and a vague mission name like Operation Odyssey Dawn, the attack on Libya is just another bum rush by Western governments on behalf of the international banksters and their military enforcers. Only in the U.S. could the president continue to employ Orwellian doublespeak to dupe and hoodwink a gullible public into declaring acts of war are motivated by the desire for peace. Sadder still is the fact only in brain-dead America would the masses fall for okey-doke like that. Only people conditioned for centuries to believe outright lies and oxymora such as the white man's burden, separate but equal, the war to end all wars, making the world safe for democracy, and we're fighting them over there so we won't have to fight them here, would continue to go for Obama's flimflam. This war is about many things, but protecting the Libyan rebels and promoting democracy are not, I repeat, are not the real reasons the U.S. and its thug allies are dropping 2,000-pound bombs and firing hundreds of Tomahawk missiles into Libyan territory. Please don't believe the folderol about, quote, smart bombs, pinpoint targeting, and precise laser guidance systems, unquote. The fact of the matter is, when they drop bombs, the bombs go boom, and they do kill innocent people, what the warmongers call collateral damage. This war against Libya is about expanding Western hegemony, putting the international banksters and multinational corporations in a position to steal Libyan oil and water as a pretext for the U.S. to get a toehold on the continent of Africa to set up its AFRICOM bases, to undermine the Chinese quest for business deals and oil in Africa, and to eliminate potential opposition to continued Israeli expansion into Arab and Muslim territories. This war is about empire, plunder, and keeping the global oligopoly in the catbird seat. Quote, in the years since Northern Africa was discovered to be the richest patch of earth due to large deposits of natural minerals that are needed to power computer technologies, over 5 million Africans in just that region have died as a result of war. The global elite have consistently used a strategy of arming and funding both sides of armed conflict. While opposing populations kill each other off, they make off with their natural resources. When they confront a government that cannot be bribed or provoked into civil or regional war, they fund brutal death squads, attempt military coups, and intimidate them by giving weapons to undemocratic neighboring regimes. If all that doesn't work, they are declared a threat to national security, and the U.S. military, private contractors, and NATO forces invade and occupy the country. Unquote. The global banking cartel has one card left to play from the book Revolution or World War III by David DeGraw. Muammar Muhammad al-Qaddafi has issues, like most men drunk on power. But he is no worse than, say, Benjamin Netanyahu, George W. Bush, or Barack Hussein Obama. At least he hasn't waged war on his neighbors or anyone else in a while. Please, don't believe the hype and fall for the okey-doke about this being a humanitarian mission. The psychopaths calling the shots and telling Obama how high to jump do not have a moral or ethical bone in their bodies. This war is about their overarching goal, massive global depopulation, control and expropriation of the world's resources, debt, peonage, and wage slavery for the masses, intimidating the rest of the world and getting their jollies off by shedding blood. The sooner more of us wake up and say no to war now, the better off we all will be in the long run. This is Junius Ricardo Stanton from The Rampart. You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned.
Our guest on today's program is William Reed, the president and CEO of Black Press International. He's a former executive director of the National Newspapers Publishers Association. He syndicates a column entitled The Business Exchange to about 140 newspapers, black-oriented newspapers around the country and in the Caribbean. He's a PR, communications, and media consultant, and it is my extreme pleasure to welcome him back to our program. And full disclosure, I met Mr. Reed when he was the executive director of the NNPA, and he was gracious enough to syndicate my column, and I'll be eternally grateful for him having that confidence in me. So welcome to the program, bro.
I wanted to start off by saying, yeah, and a friend of yours as well. So thank you for adding that part. We've been friends for a long time, and we think a lot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm glad that you you wanted to interview me in regards to the war that's going on in Libya and the war that the United States is and Barack Obama has started and by invading an African country. I think Black Americans are in a tizzy since Obama invaded Libya. Some are asking why Libya, and others are asking why not Libya. You know, but I'm just wondering if any Blacks see this as an act of imperial aggression.
Well, you do, and I do, and we've both written about it, and I think that most thinking people see it for what it is, but unfortunately, a lot of our people are so caught up in the euphoria of a quote black unquote president that they're just lost their mind.
If you were to take a poll right now today, after this, a week after we invaded into that North African country, if you took a poll among blacks, you probably still get the 95% approval rating on this that they give to Black Barack Obama in every other way.
Well,
his actions.
Yeah, but I think at some point in time, we're going to have to wake up. I mean, it took a lot of courage for you to March 20th column addresses this issue, and you paint it clearly that this is an act of aggression, it's an imperialist act. And I'm wondering what has been the response to you from your readers.
The reaction has been, I only get letters of dissension. I have received some letters saying a good article and well said, but I pay most attention to those people who are detractors, and some I've had people say to me that question my patriotism as far as this my position on this war is concerned. I mean, how can you? They question my really when they question my patriotism, they question my questioning Barack Obama, and that's the problem. But I've been questioning Barack Obama since he threw Reverend Jeremiah Wright under the bus.
Well, I had questions about him and his meteoric rise. If you remember, he spoke at the, I believe it was the 2004 or 2006. 2004. And I'm saying, wait a minute, how's somebody like him get in that arena prime time that quickly?
Yeah. So, that's a question yet to be explored, my friend.
Well,
it is a mighty, mighty good question.
Well, once I saw that, and once I saw, if you look at what they did with the people behind Adolf Hitler did, and you look at Barack Obama, it's very similar in terms of his fame coming during a time of crisis. He publishes a book. They promote the book. He gets national attention, and he becomes like this charismatic media creation, and it's almost the exact same playbook.
Some friends I have I only have a few who go against, but some friends I have call him the false messiah, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It has been a messiah like Rick Rising. He's come from nowhere to be let's say the most important man in the world. I guess it's probably what the imperialists say.
But then too, if you look at what he said during, I think they took advantage of his campaign. People took advantage of the angst that people had about George Bush and the way the country was going.
Yes.
And so they fashioned a campaign that was very chameleon-like. If you, because there are people who thought he was anti-war, and he clearly said he wasn't.
I thought he was.
No.
Yeah.
Go back and look at his speeches and listen to his speeches. He told you he was going to go into Pakistan.
Yes.
And then that, when he said it, then that gave Bush the bright idea. Okay, I'll do it. So he preempts Obama by bombing Pakistan.
Yeah. I think at this point in our conversation, we need to point out that what you were talking about in his aggression that he presented at that time has now played its way out to the fact that Bush, at no time during Bush's administration did he have more than 30,000 people, 30,000 soldiers in Afghanistan. Now, under Obama, Afghanistan is now Obama's war. Obama has over 100,000 troops, three times as many troops in Afghanistan, in addition to support personnel, which we'll call CIA and the other parts.
Yeah, but they also, the mercenaries, I mean, the contractors.
Yes.
So that bumps that number even up higher.
Exactly. Exactly. But most people don't pay attention to the fact that Obama has done that, and particularly most blacks who actually, many of us oppose the war and aggression in the way that the United States does it. But he has not only increased the number of soldiers, soldiering personnel in Afghanistan, the drone fights, which kill hundreds of Afghani children, women, and civilians. Every day or every week, for sure, it's just out of sight and out of mind. And so he has carried on the aggression of Bush in a Bush-like manner.
Well, and then you talk about Afghanistan, Pakistan. You look at the fighting in Yemen. You look at the proxy war in Somalia, and now you're looking at the just crass hypocrisy of what's happening in Libya, where they use the pretext we wanted to defend civilians and we want to defend the quote unquote the insurgents or the rebels, yet Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, to a limited degree Jordan, all did the same thing that Gaddafi did, and there was not one peep about them going in there to have a quote-unquote no-fly zone, and we both know that that's nonsense in terms of that whole piece about a no-fly zone.
Yeah.
That's just
I wish more people recognize the crass hypocrisy, as you say, of these situations. I mean, if you just look anywhere beneath the surface, you'll see that there's some imperialist aggression going on.
Well, that NATO has morphed, in my view, to be the enforcers and the thugs of the IMF, the World Bank, and USAID, who are really, and the Bank of International Settlements, who are calling the shots for Cameron, Obama, and Sarkozy, and the rest of them.
If I could interrupt you for a minute, but I hope that the people listening to this would have read the book, Diary of an International Man,
yeah.
Know exactly what you're talking about. But who was it? The World Bank and the International Development Fund really knew what they were doing, and particularly in third world, well, Africa, third world countries and Africa, it's a shame, and it's something that deserves people to look underneath. If I may, though, let's talk about the crass hypocrisy of what's going on now a little bit more. This invasion of Libya by Obama and his NATO friends or allies was cooked up at the among the Security Council by another interesting African American in high office, Susan Rice.
Yeah, Susan Rice.
Yeah, and she went through, and they were able to get. And I hope people listening understand what we're talking about here, but if you could draw out a little bit more. The United States, which is a member of the Security Council, which has 15 members, the United States was able to legitimize this invasion of Libya with a 10-5 vote, a 10-0 vote in the 15-member Security Council. Am I making any sense here? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were people who abstained who could have knocked it off the loop, such as Russia.
Yeah, China.
And China,
mm-hmm.
But they just abstained, so they didn't keep it from happening. But this is a conglomeration of NATO of Western powers who were really former colonialists in Libya who are now bombing Gaddafi, and what is the reason exactly that they're bombing Gaddafi? Is it for humanitarian intervention, or is it an intervention in the middle of a civil war that's going on in the country, which is internal?
Well, they claim that the rebels asked them for protection because Gaddafi was using airstrikes against them. But in my view, that's just a pretext. Because all the other countries that I mentioned, Saudi Arabia, when this,
absolutely.
They unleashed their security forces. They didn't use airplanes, but they used bombs. I mean, they used artillery in the security forces. So what's the difference?
How many more people have been killed in Libya than were killed in Bahrain during the past week? Or Yemen?
Yeah, but they don't say that. I mean, Yemen is a full-scale civil war, but they still support the president there.
How much oil is in Yemen?
Well, the oil, Yemen is a geostrategic. They want that for geostrategics. Your point is well taken, and it is, in my view, for oil, it's for water, it's for to use it as a pretext for the United States to have a AFRICOM base, at least in Libya, if not other places. Because to their credit, the African leaders have refused to, except for Djibouti, have refused to entertain AFRICOM.
Yes.
And, of course, there's the 5,000-pound gorilla in the room, Israel, that nobody talks about.
Nobody talks about it. And we may later on in this conversation, but let's go back to the fact of AFRICOM. And now, people need to know that the African Union, which is comprised of the African, is the representation arm for the 53 countries in Africa. The African Union has opposed this invasion of Libya by Western forces.
Yeah, but not as vociferously as somebody like Mugabe. I mean, I'm just now starting to see, I don't know if it was a blackout or what, I'm just now starting to see a few individual leaders, but there was never, I didn't see any real adamant fight against this whole thing.
Well, they did, they had a meeting in Addis just leading up to, as Obama was getting ready to, it's been about 2 weeks ago, but the African Union did say, and they sent a letter to Obama opposing any at that time, it was in opposition to the no-fly zone no-fly zone over Libya. But at the same time that the African Union was sending that, or meeting and sending that letter, that's when Susan Rice and Hillary Clinton were working the United Nations Security Council in order to get the right to fly over for the no-fly zone.
Well, if you go back, and I'm hearing people making this comparison, and I made the comparison that Obama, because he has so many Clinton people in his inner circle, he's doing the same thing that Bill Clinton did in Bosnia. And I suspect he'll go beyond that and eventually have boots on the ground. But the Bosnia thing was just to do an aerial bombing. They bombed those people for 80 some straight days. So
I don't go back that, you're absolutely right, but I don't go back that far. I simply call Obama Bush light, because I've lived through the Bush days recently and the Bush military aggression, and I see absolutely no separation between how Bush thinks, his worldview, and Obama's worldview.
Well, I would take issue with the likeness, because he has increased the drone attacks. He's increased the commitment to Pakistan. He's increased the proxy war in Somalia and Yemen. So I think he's put his pedal to the metal even harder than Bush did.
Well, so if that's the case, if what you and I have been talking about is true about Obama and his performance in office, why then is he held in such high esteem among African Americans?
Because of what I call the delusion of inclusion. We have an aspiration to be a part of this country. And I say, you know, Martin Luther King once confided to one of his cohorts, he felt that he was attempting to integrate into a burning building.
Yeah.
Well, the building is even hotter now, but for some reason, the quote-unquote leadership still tries to get in the building.
African Americans, I mean, from my generation, I mean, have bought into this American system of the imperialist American system. You know, if for those of us who have traveled the question, you know, why do they hate us? You know, African Americans have bought into the ugly American syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
and have done it with a bomb, you know, particularly with the election of we have met the enemy and they
yeah
elect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think too we are a small fraction of the people. I mean, you have a storied history as a communicator, a writer, and to your credit, you have integrity. There are a lot of people who are following the paycheck. So if they're told to write this story, I had issues just to go back, you know, like within the time frame you're talking about. Remember, the NNPA sent representatives. They were embedded. There were people. They were embedded with the troops with the invasion of Iraq. And there were people who willingly went along and they played that up, playing up the black generals and the black soldiers and all that kind of stuff. So this whole militarism and this fascism that we're in, we're very much like the Germans who sat around and watched as the SS and Hitler and his whole program took over that country. And we're not, you know, Barack Obama ran on Change We Can Believe In. When he did not shut down Gitmo. And my litmus test for him was, okay, let's see if he closes the School of the Americas if he sold for change. And he didn't do either one of those. I knew it was just all bogus.
The School of Americas, did you say?
Mm-hmm. Well, they have a different name now, but you're familiar with that.
That.
Huh?
What is that?
That is the program where the United States trains most of the secret police, the military, and the security forces for Latin America. They train them in torture techniques, counterinsurgency, and they fund them. And through their ranks, most of the brutal dictators in Central and South America have come up through their ranks. And so a lot of the stuff that they did at Abu Ghraib and Gitmo and all that, they teach that, and they have been teaching that for since the 50s there. You know, so it's a continuation of the Nazi program, the Nazis that they brought over here.
That's such a very interesting commentary, particularly in light of the fact that Obama just came from
Brazil
yeah. and Argentina. But particularly while he was in Brazil is when he initiated the war against Libya. But the Brazilians are opposed to it.
Well, but a lot of times I think he was sold to the world, not just the United States, as an alternative to the Bush mentality, an alternative to the neocon agenda.
Yes.
And he's basically cut from the same cloth. It's just that he's a chameleon. He presented himself as something different, and a lot of us read things into it that aren't really there, or they just misread it altogether.
Chameleon is a very good way of putting it. But a lot of people did misread. I have to say though, you know, we're on the radio, and I have to say for the record though that I did not vote for Barack Obama.
Neither did I.
But people always think that in my case, because I'm a registered Republican, now when I make that statement, they always think that I voted for John McCain, but I didn't. I voted for something McKinley.
So did I.
Exactly. So I'm very, very, very proud to have voted for her, and she's made some interesting comments, by the way, since then, since the bombing.
Right. In fact, I just read something about her, I think Saturday.
Yes. So with this kind of point of agreement, and you agreeing, me agreeing, and Cynthia McKinney all agreeing on the fact that Obama's not doing the right thing.
Well, but, you know, you and I right now are talking about his foreign policy, but I'm concerned about his domestic policies because, number one, when he announced his cabinet, remember a lot of the first rounders didn't qualify because they were tax evaders or they weren't thoroughly vetted. They had some other things that came out to disqualify them, if that in fact is true, because you know how they run these games on people. But then he started getting a lot of the very people, particularly from the economic piece, the same people who opened the floodgates to allow the crash and the dike to burst. You know, Summers and Geithner and all those guys.
Yeah.
Even on the law enforcement, Holder, you know, Susan Rice. These people aren't for the masses. They're not for doing right. You know, so
as soon as retreads
they
have been around this way before. Eric Holder has been around under Clinton. He was a high official in the Justice Department. Susan Rice, ironically, that Susan Rice is a very interesting story. Very interesting story. And people listening should really research
her background.
And you talk about a chameleon. Well, I don't know if chameleon is the right word for Susan Rice. She's right out there. But you would think she was actually a she was the what is the title? The Assistant Secretary of State for Africa.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
they hate her in Africa. She is a, also, if there's such a, such an ironic being as a black Rhodes Scholar. Susan Rice is a black Rhodes Scholar.
Well, she's the...
Susan Rice, Cecil Rhodes.
No, but she's the Democratic equivalent of Condoleezza Rice, and they're not, from as far as I know, they're no relation, but just the same mindset.
Same mentality, same
yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
Same worldview and
yep.
same mentality, which is hardly the mentality of my Aunt Rosa or my black teacher in, you know, when I was growing up. Hardly the same mentality. These are black women who, you know, I did an article one time on would you want your daughter to grow up to be like Condoleezza Rice. Got a lot of flack on it. A lot of people said to me, of course I would, you know. But Condoleezza Rice has been proven, well, and so has General
mm-hmm.
Colin Powell.
Right.
Been proven to have told lies in very sensitive situations that involve the foreign policy and foreign wars that have affected a lot of lives. But she is the first African-American ambassador to the United States, to the United Nations. So that's how we regard her.
Well, no, she's first female. Yeah. Because remember they had Andrew Young.
Yeah, Andrew Young. I'm so sorry. I did mean female, but I'm so busy talking about it. But the part that I really want people to pay attention to, and look, Susan Rice has a history of being racist against Africa, and she is the prime mover on this aggression against former Gaddafi in Libya.
Well, two, the other thing is if you look at how they went about it, they secured the blessings initially of the Arab League, just like they did when they bribed a lot of them to go along with the war against Iraq.
But the Arab League has, for public information, the Arab League has, I wouldn't say resented that, but has turned around and has condemned this bombing and taking sides in Libya.
Well, because they felt that, to use your term, they drank the Kool-Aid. The whole notion of a no-fly zone is supposed to be a demilitarization in terms of aerial maneuvers and activities. Their bombing structure. They're bombing the ports, they're bombing hospitals. And so now this puts the people in the Arab League and obviously the people in Africa on alert that this is more than what they bargained for.
What you're saying, and I think you said much more graphically than I did, what you're saying is that the legislation that was passed only dealt with clearing the skies as opposed to bombing underneath.
Right.
Yeah.
And it preventing, in worst case scenario, preventing any military aerial maneuvers on the part of Mr. Gaddafi. This goes far beyond that understanding because they're strafing... land, they're going after tanks, they're going after military personnel, they're going after the infrastructure.
Yeah. And
they went after the radar.
And it is a direct intervention into a civil conflict.
Yep.
On the side of on one side or the other, on the side of the so-called rebels.
Right.
By the way, who are people don't know that Libya is not a poor country.
No. And the rebels aren't some rabble, some down and out destitute people. A lot of these people have been educated in Europe and the United States. Some of them are very wealthy, almost like a bourgeois kind of thing.
So they're just provocateurs, yeah.
Or their assets, the interesting thing is now you hear the term CIA. I mean, well, Al Qaeda. In my view, Al Qaeda is the CIA, the MI6, and Mossad.
Oh, so, well, you have to explain that to me because I don't understand it. But go ahead.
All right, the Mujahideen. Osama bin Laden was supported and armed and trained by the United States, backdoor through Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. A lot of the same people were used in the Balkans, in Chechnya and Kosovo and all that kind of stuff. So there's a connection there that these people have been set up, trained, funded by Western powers. And so you send them, like you said, they're provocateurs. You send them and they create havoc and they give a pretext, an excuse for police action. And, you know, now we've been brainwashed to believe that Al Qaeda is this worldwide global network of ruthless cutthroats, when in fact they're a handful of basically either patsies or people who have been trained and funded and put up by these very governments who then come in to offer the solution and the come in as quote unquote liberators and saviors.
Times that we live in.
Well, then it's not new. It's nothing new. It's just that because we're in the media, we have a lot more access to information than a lot of other people. And because we are critical thinkers, we can put things out there that a lot of our contemporaries and peers aren't even thinking about or not aware of because they have other issues to worry about, like keeping their jobs.
And on that, then I really want to just for a moment talk about African Americans have really gone mainstream. We've opted for mainstream values.
Yeah, I need you to speak up a little bit louder.
We've opted for mainstream values. We've opted for mainstream views. You know, we have opted to be part and parcel of American aggression. That has been going on for many years around the world that we were at one time opposed to. When I say we, I mean the black race of people. And so I think it's I think it's imperative that we as a people take a look at what we've inherited, what we've become, and particularly do we now have an imperialist nature? When we use the term superpower, are we talking about us?
Well, but remember when we were the moral compass for this country, whether it was Henry Highland Garnett or Frederick Douglass or up through the times to Martin Luther King, Malcolm X or whatever, they waged a counterinsurgency against that. That's what COINTELPRO was about. And so that's why there is a lack of dissent, aside from the fact that the so-called liberals and progressives drank the Kool-Aid, the Obama Kool-Aid. But from our perspective, black people, they did a Hiroshima and Nagasaki on the black movement, the black power movement, the black anti-war movement, all of that. So we're looking at a devastated landscape of people who have been beaten down because every time we come up with something, whether it was black power, Afrocentricity, whatever, they counter it and they, you know, put up a major counterinsurgency. It's just that COINTELPRO, which is still going on, by the way, was so devastating to our community.
And now we're down to a precious few.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you have a situation where if you look across the board where our people get rewarded for being goofy, our people get rewarded for being promoting like sociopathic values, misogyny, self-hatred, and keeping on the most vile stereotypes that the Europeans put on us prior to us you know, getting to this level to participate in the media?
Well, my friend, that's very heavy thinking. That's very heavy thinking. So I appreciate being your friend.
Well, but I mean, it's not something that you haven't covered in your writings over the years. So, I mean, you know it and you see it. It's just that a lot of times the circles we travel in, this type of thinking is either hush-hush or discouraged.
Yeah. And I'm very pleased to have known you, and I'm very pleased to give out that kind of information for those people who really do, I think you used the term earlier, those people who do critical thinking, for them to think about and think about critically where they are. And I guess one of the major things that I would want to say is that, what is my raison d'etre? What is my purpose in life? What have I done for me and my own, those who are closest? What have I done in order to leave the world in a better place for them?
Well, from what I've seen, you've been about truth. You spoke truth to power. And so if there is a judgment day, then you can answer, I used the talent and the skill that you gave me to attempt to make this world a better place.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And if there is a judgment day for us all, I guess we'll have to meet with those kinds of thoughts and concerns.
What do you have on the docket for the business exchange? And tell folks how many papers is the business exchange in?
Well, the business exchange is in about 100. It varies.
Yeah, I know.
It varies. Over 100 newspapers. Not all of them. Some are biweekly, some are weekly. I think biweekly means every other week. In
mm-hmm.
this case, I'm using it that way. And some are monthly. So it's like over 100 of those kinds of black-oriented newspapers across the country, even in Alaska. None in Hawaii, I think. But the business exchange in goes out weekly and appears in those papers. I'm going to be talking about coming up next week. I'm going to be talking about a couple of things, next couple of weeks. One is the census that has just come out, the 2010 census, and the fact that blacks are moving from moving from big cities into suburbia, which is another part of the sociological part as well. But cities like Washington D.C. is no longer
the chocolate city.
no longer can be called chocolate
yeah.
city because whites and Hispanics are becoming the majority. They're already the majority in the political dealings of city council and all of that. In the case of Detroit, Detroit has lost city of Detroit since last census. It's lost 25%. Population, which was a major
enclave. Yeah.
And most of the middle class in Detroit have moved to outside Wayne County. And of course, in Atlanta, blacks are moving, have been, and are moving more and more out into DeKalb County and Fulton County.
Well, thought. As you look at this, and we just had a paper, the Philadelphia Tribune in Philadelphia, Bruce Crawley did a piece on that in the Sunday edition, and he talked about recently, when I go back and look at the Kerner Commission, and that was one of their recommendations, the decentralization and deconcentration of black populations in these core areas. That's been one of their goals for since the latter part of the 60s.
And the objective with the Kerner Commission was what?
To look and examine the causes and solutions to the urban unrest that followed the assassination of Martin Luther King.
Gotcha.
I was named after Otto Kerner, and who was the chairman, who was a former, former governor of Michigan, I think. But if you look at it, what they did, they focused everybody on the fact that they said racism was the cause. So, of course, that white folks went off on that. And so you're so busy talking about racism and that added that word to our lexicon, they forgot to read the whole thing and see that one of their goals was to decentralize black populations. And they've been doing it since. One of their goals was to militarize the police. They've done that. And so they're pretty much on target.
You told me something. That's the reason people should listen to people like you. You told me something here. I've heard of the Kerner Commission, but I never knew what the goal or the motivation or the reasons behind it were. And now what you're saying is that history is showing the results of it.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, things are... you're seeing more and more people taking back, they call them the exurbs, more and more people taking back the cities because it's too expensive for some people to live in the suburbs. So that's what regentrification is all about.
That's what it's all about. Okay.
All right, brother. I appreciate your being available to us. Give us a contact, either email or website or what have you, so folks can keep abreast of what you're doing.
Well, I'm at, I don't really have an interactive website. I guess I just say people like you I keep in touch with, but people can take a look at your local black newspaper, like you just mentioned, the Philadelphia Tribune, or the Chicago Defender, or the Atlanta Inquirer. You'll read it in there.
Okay. All right, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, my brother.
All right, man. Stay strong.
Bye-bye.
All right.
We thank our guest, Bill Reed, for being here with us today, sharing his insights, and we encourage you to check out his column, Business Exchange, particularly the one that was dated March the 20th, 2011. And we encourage you to follow Bill's admonition not to drink the Kool-Aid, not to drink the imperialist warmongering Kool-Aid that is being bantied around by the prostitutes in the corporate media who basically have devolved into being stenographers, megaphones, and cheerleaders for their owners, who support the war and who are part and parcel to the cabal I spoke about in terms of the international gangsters who are waging the war in our From the Ramparts piece. According to the clock on the wall, that's about all we had to get out of here. Encourage you to stay tuned to Rainbow Soul all day long. And as always, this is Junius Ricardo Stanton wishing each and every one of you love, peace, health, prosperity, wisdom, but most of all, power. The power to find meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in your life so that you evolve into all that the Creator intends for you to be. And your life manifests magnificently as one who has actualized the latent potential, divinity, creativity, and power within you. Until next time, continue to do all you can to make this world a better place. You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow. That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith nominates, and no court is going to try anything.